Well, hey, Anna, thank you so much for this opportunity to speak to you. I've been excited about this interview for weeks now, and we finally get to make it happen. And I just want to say thank you for taking the time to talk to our listeners, our audience this afternoon. And before we really dive on in, I'd love for you to introduce yourself.
Well, thank you, Ben. I am definitely excited to be here too. The really cool opportunity, cool podcast that you got here. So my name's Anna Megan Hart, and I am a fourth year osteopathic med student. And I like to say osteopathic because it's a little bit different from the MD counterparts. And so that's something that I've been wanting to emphasize along my journey. And I am not only a med student, but I am an athlete. I am an artist, and my goals are to eventually, bring some more holistic health care into the world and help people understand and learn how to heal themselves, just like I was able to do through my process, through gymnastics, through college sports, and now to this point where I have dealt with a lot of my chronic injuries kind of popping back up and learning how to heal through that and kind of understanding the process of what healing looks like and what that means. So I'm excited to be here, Ben. Thank you.
Yeah, I can't wait. And you've already just done so much with your introduction. There's so much to dive into, and I'm looking forward to it because you described like the difference between osteo and like a typical medical doctorate degree. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? And then I'd love to explore your story of like how it's like a personal journey, right? Because now you're wanting to do this holistic health because you've been on that journey yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So DOs and MDs, they both go to 4 years of medical school. We take the same boards. I actually have to take twice the amount of boards because I'm taking both the DO and the MD boards. So I end up taking 4 8-hour long board exams. And because I am a DO, it means that we have a little bit more of an emphasis on the body's ability to self-heal. That structure and function are reciprocally interrelated, and that these pieces are something that we need to take with us into learning how to heal the body. And so we also do something called manipulation. So I have extra courses in hands-on healing, which a lot of people know what chiropractic is. So chiropractic is actually an offshoot of osteopathy where they focus mainly on the spine. And in osteopathy, I can do the cracking and popping that chiropractors do. I am capable of it. It's called HVLA. It's fun to do, but I also feel like the more important piece is understanding the structure of the body, the tensional integrity or tensegrity of the body, and using that to my advantage to understand how I can manipulate the soft tissues of not only the spine, but the pelvis, the sacrum, all of your extremities, head, neck, et cetera. It all works together in order for the body to be a well-oiled, fully functional, not in pain, depending on who you ask, like whether or not pain is a good thing, right? We all go through some level of suffering, but our goal is to make sure people are functional and able to do all of the things that they want to do. And for me, that's functioning at a high level and still being able to train in the sports that I like to do, the weight training, snowboarding, running, all that good stuff. So I feel like I got a little off track there, but osteopathy is more focused on some of the ways that we can treat people and help people heal themselves through a way that's not going to involve medications and not going to involve sending somebody to get more procedures. My goals when I'm seeing a patient is to get them fully functional and in the least amount of pain possible. I think we all go through some level of pain, and in some ways, pain is a good thing, but to get them as functional as possible without having to go through any invasive procedures and without having to take medications. Those are my goals.
Yeah, it's funny because what you're talking about really aligns up with like physical therapy practice. And that's so cool to see like how what you're going through studying and like your goals really align with what mine will be as a physical therapist when I see people is getting back to function, kind of being a movement specialist.
And I think it's interesting that you're talking about, you get to do the manipulations like chiropractor, because we also learn a couple of those. And I love that quick stretch and that physiological effect you get from that to help decrease that pain that you were talking about.
Yeah, definitely. Like one of the things that has been the most satisfying for me is I actually did a fellowship in OMM, which is the osteopathic manipulative medicine. And during this time, I actually had my own patients in my own clinic where I functioned as a resident. So I saw my own patients. I did my intake. I understood what their problem was. And then I would treat them myself after, you know, my attending would come chat with them, et cetera. And the most satisfying piece is having somebody come in who is in a lot of pain or not able to function and have them walk out that same day feeling a lot better. And that's one thing that you get with osteopathy that I have not seen with my MD counterparts.
Yeah, because you're
figuring out what's important to the patient, and then you're using their body and like science to, one, alleviate some of their pain, help them manage it when they're away from us and from you. Right. And I think that's what's incredible. That's kind of something I pulled out through what you were talking about. And you can see that it's not like, it's kind of traditional, but it's got this evolution of like modern medicine coming into it, because we're not using medications. We're using the body itself to heal and to help these people.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does go really hand in hand with PT. So the specialty that I'm going into, which is physical medicine and rehabilitation, you see them a lot in the hospital setting, but there's also outpatient clinic. There's a whole bunch of different fellowships you can do with it. But the main thing that I see a lot is all of the PM&R docs that I work with is they work very closely with physical therapists, because a lot of the treatments that we end up doing or certain things that we find that are causing that person's pain, it can all be solved by strengthening certain muscles or increasing their activity or teaching them how to mitigate some of their pain through certain motions, certain stretches, etc. And PTs are fantastic at kind of implementing these things and spending a lot more time with people to teach them how to strengthen and heal themselves.
Yeah, I think the benefit of the PT is like the time with the patient, because you guys really do have a big caseload. I mean, like I've heard doctors talk about, like I had to see 50 to 60 patients in a day and it's 15 minutes at a time. And like, that's why, like, and that's not talking bad about doctors, because we as healthcare providers communicate really well and work well together. It's just kind of how the cookie crumbles, I would say. But I love your focus. Like, it's just so interesting because I've never heard about it.
Yeah, and it's something that historically I hadn't heard about either. And when I ended up going to an osteopathic medical school, I thought I was going to be a surgeon because I wanted to do something with my hands, because that's something that keeps me engaged and is interesting to me. I needed to do something with my hands, and I couldn't be sitting all day. And I initially... when I was younger, I thought that I wanted my patients to be under so they couldn't talk to me while I was working on them. But I have a better understanding of the human condition, and now just actually love chatting with all of my patients when I work with them. And I found that doing osteopathic manipulation is something that I can do with my hands, and I'm constantly moving and constantly assessing the body. And it's just much more satisfying, I think, to me to be able to treat somebody in this way that will maybe prevent them from eventually needing a surgery, rather than having to be invasive with somebody like that and then putting them through an entire recovery from something that they may actually never be the same from.
Why do you think it's vital that we make that connection with that patient?
I think it's important to understand them and what their goals are before actually treating them, because everybody has different goals and different directions in life. And I noticed that, I might have one patient that's like, yeah, I want to get back to running 5 days a week. And then I might have another that's like, I just really need to be able to go upstairs. And so understanding where they are in their life is going to temper how I create my treatment plan and how much I think that they'll be able to handle at one time too. I think also building that rapport gives the patient buy-in too, because you need them to be just as invested in your treatment plan that you give them as you're invested in it. And without that buy-in, they're not gonna do it. And your treatment plan is only as good as the one that the patient will actually do.
I think that buy-in is important, and I think it helps to not only create a really great relationship,
you know, with the patient practitioner, but then you also can help empower that patient to want to get better on their own. Because then they start to see those, you can see the wheels spinning when they start to see things working.
Yeah, I think empowerment is huge, because unless the person believes that they can get better, they won't. And you see this in a lot. I've done a few rotations in pain clinics, and the people who want to get better, they find a way, they get better. The people who are identifying with their pain and identifying with their disease, and it becomes part of who they are, they don't get better. They stay in that pain cycle. So you have to have that buy-in and understand, like, how can I motivate this person? How can I empower them to understand that they can heal, that their body is self-healing? They just need to put in the time and effort. And a lot of times, like, maybe people don't want to put in the time and effort. They're happy with their space that they're in. So that can be the really difficult piece of medicine and, like, physical therapy too. Like, if your patients aren't doing your exercises, like, what's the point? You have to find a way to get them to understand that they have the power to help themselves.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing to point out, is like, you have those patients that are kind of, like you said, okay with where they're at. They don't want to do anymore. My grandmother's the same way. She did not like doing her exercises after her total knee surgery, all of that kind of stuff. She was just that patient. And like, for the people listening, like, we're not being unsympathetic. It's like, you have to understand that the practitioner, especially us two sitting here talking about this, we actually really care. We really want to do everything we can for that patient. It's just, there comes a time where we can't control how that patient reacts, because that's just how they are. And that doesn't mean we're not going to stop trying. I think that's something to point out, is like, a lot of practitioners care. They're not going to stop trying, even if you are one of those patients or happens to be. And then we just kind of go back to the drawing board to see, is there a way we can get through to you to get you to want yourself to be better?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of my favorite books is James Clear's Atomic Habits. And so understanding people's routines and understanding how they function in their everyday life can actually help you understand how to incorporate some of the treatments or exercises in a way that they can kind of couple it with habits that they already have. And I think exactly what you said, like, it's not that we don't care. It's that there are these challenges that we have to figure out how to overcome with different people and their lifestyles and their mindsets, that if we don't understand that and we don't incorporate it, now we're just kind of working uphill against something that we'll never get past. And that's one of the challenges of the modern healthcare practitioner, right? Is just the people factor. It's not the information, it's not the exercises, but it's the people factor and getting them to understand their situation and understand that they do have power in their situation and they can help themselves.
So glad you brought up that book, because I've been racking my brain because I'm on a break right now between semesters. And that book is very powerful, because, like, he talks about the, you know, it's associating certain things throughout the day to do, like, exercises, and it's basically small steps to greatness is probably a good explanation to it. And that's something I've been racking my brain about, is like, how can we make something so simple and so easy? And then from there, we just grow, because all it takes is momentum. And I think that's where it comes into the people factor of getting people involved, getting the patients involved, and then that self-empowerment, because empowerment, I think, is probably one of the biggest things and biggest hurdles to get over.
Empowerment is huge, and momentum is huge. Like, a lot of times you just have to start so small. And I mean, people think that they have to make huge changes in their lives in order to get better, but it's really just the very small changes every single day, which are the most important.
Yeah, it's like, what is it? Progress, not perfection, right? And then at the same time, it's your journey, not someone else's. So don't compare.
Exactly. Exactly. 100%. I love that.
I really love this conversation, but I definitely want to kind of rewind and circle back. You were talking about the, you chose this profession that you're getting into because you get to work with your hands. And I'm kind of curious, what do you think about the healing power of hands? Because it's something that I've always kind of felt and I've seen in action at a PT place I worked at, but then getting to use my hands to do all these tests and measures we do and like certain other techniques that PTs get to use and I'm sure you get to use. And so I'd love to kind of hear your perspective on that.
Well, I think it's huge, honestly. And there's a epidemic in healthcare of doctors that don't touch their patients, which I think is horrifying. Because touching your patients, as weird as that might sound right now, but it's important to make people feel cared for and like their bodies are understood. And for me, it's also valuable pieces of information when I'm treating somebody, because I take into account everybody's tissue will feel a different way if there's something going on with it, right? I'm sure you've probably experienced this in PT. People have probably experienced this in their own day-to-day. Like if you have a muscle that is not happy, it's going to feel different from the muscles that are healthy and happy and functioning well. And also the feedback from the patient where they feel like, oh, now you're really understanding my problem. You're able to gain information from what my body is communicating to you and showing you through what you're noticing with your hands. And now they feel more cared for and better understood because you're able to use your hands to create assessments and figure out where you're going to take your plan. And now you also have more information and better feedback to create a better plan because you were able to use the information that you gained from just figuring out what this person's tissue is doing in these certain areas that are in pain.
Yeah, it's like this great assessment tool to like get in, get your hands on the patient, figure out, like you said, the muscles that maybe are overactive and then also ones that might be underactive. And then you can test individual and then also the tissue, right? Because it depends on if the person's like in a hospital bed, do you develop bed sores or someone's not active, they have sore spots. And so it's a great way to get in. And so I do really appreciate you sharing your perspective on that.
Yeah, I mean, with osteopathy, the big thing about osteopathic physicians is like, with the 2 years of training that we get, like without doing a fellowship like myself, you still get a great understanding of what healthy tissue feels like, whether that's soft tissue, whether that's muscle, ligament, et cetera. You understand what healthy tissue feels like. So now if you're working on somebody in a hospital bed, I can automatically tell, oh, like your psoas is incredibly tight, or like the fascia in your low back has been tense this whole time. Now I can do a couple of things to treat that. You're going to be a little bit more comfortable throughout your day. So it's just such a underrated, valuable way to assess people and treat people. I think it's huge.
Yeah. And I think what's great is, for us as PTs, is getting the doctorate and then being able to have direct access, which I think is going to help the entire healthcare system, you know, and then patients can come see us to do what you're talking about, getting hands-on other things. And then again, it comes into that communication aspect. But yeah, I'm sitting here, we're nerding out so much. I love it because everything you're talking about, like I just never knew like what you're going to school for existed. And so now that I know, it's great. And now I can do more research and like I can put in my back pocket that if there's something that maybe I can't do or goes beyond what I can't do, I'm like, okay, I can send it to, you know, someone like yourself. And so that's what I think is great. And then people can listen and hear this and be like, oh, maybe I need to go to this person or this person. Right. Because
absolutely. I think this needs to become more well understood and well known, because the things that I get results with that are so simple and so easy to do, it's almost frustrating that more people don't have access to this. And the other thing is too, is a lot of healthcare practitioners, they follow the money. And so you're not getting payout from insurance companies really for doing hands-on manipulation. So it's a lot harder to find people that do what I do and enjoy doing what I do.
Yeah, that's a big rabbit hole, is that insurance?
Huge.
But I think I'm going to be very optimistic, and I really believe that there are going to be more PTs, and more doctors such as yourself to get out there and become in the world that like do those manipulations, get hands on. Because I know people follow the money, but it seems that
you just see this evolution of healthcare I'm seeing, and I don't know if it's kind of the same for you.
Yeah, I really do feel like this is the future of healthcare, that more people are starting to understand the system and how it's broken, and that people like me are going to be really helping people heal themselves, and that that's the direction that we need to go, rather than, feeding people more pills, et cetera. And there's definitely more people out there than I thought that are like me, which is great. And a lot of the people from my school who do want to go in this direction, like they're out there. So I think it's growing, which is amazing. And I am definitely optimistic about it as well. And I see it moving in a positive direction, which is great.
Yeah, it really helps with social media too.
Yeah. Oh, that's a huge way of, sharing information and sharing what you do. And I think initially I didn't love social media, but I think that is one of the positive aspects of social media, is being able to share information to a large number of people and get it out there, all over the world at the click of a button. So I think that's one thing that maybe I'll need to invest in more in the future here too.
It's hard.
But I agree. That's something we've been told too, is to look at it, But then I also wonder, is there going to come a time where there's too much education out there? I feel like that could be a thing in the future.
Yeah. I mean, you're seeing that already now, where there's a vast amount of information out there, and it's hard to tell what is real, what is not, what is actually the truth. And that's one of the hard things about the internet era, right? You have so much information at your fingertips, but how do you determine what is valuable and what is not? And I think that's definitely a huge challenge. And I use certain resources and certain people, like Huberman Lab, Peter Attia. Those are a couple big ones. And then trying to find case studies and mentors that I trust. That's really where I get most of my information, rather than just Google searches. But I think if you're seeking out certain information and you find positive ethical resources, I think that's the best way to go.
Yeah, those are two great, is Dr. Peter Tay and Huberman Labs. They're both phenomenal.
Another one that I've kind of attracted to was Lane Norton, who does a lot. He does a lot with nutrition. He has a PhD in nutrition, and he really uses systematic reviews, which I think is great, and talks about certain research and how you have a lot of the carnivore diet people that come out and say a bunch of stuff. He's like, then you look at this, and this. He's like, yeah, but this study that they cited, this is what's wrong with it. They didn't tell you about this, or they didn't tell you about that. And I think that's probably what a lot of people got to start doing too. And I think there are some coming forward. I know Peter Attia does it as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the issues with research too, because you can put out any kind of paper that says this is our conclusion, but then you can go back through that paper and basically dismantle their statistics or something like that, that actually makes their conclusion invalid or not significant. So that's a hard piece. If you're coming from a layman's perspective, you're not in science or not in the medical field, and now you're trying to understand what nutrition is going to be best for me. And maybe you're working hard trying to read some scientific papers to understand it, but you don't know how to break down a scientific paper. Then maybe you're getting information that isn't actually the truth or reality. So it's good to have those people out there that actually do break it down and will give you straight up information like that. I also like Dr. Mark Hyman. I've read a few of his books too. He does some good stuff in nutrition. I think Grain Brain is one of the ones that I really liked. But it's always good to seek out some of the experts in the field that will be really transparent with you like that.
Yeah, I think that transparency is a big thing. But then at the same time, the person reading it, trust your gut. Your intuition is intelligent. And like if something doesn't feel right, it's probably not right. And I think talking about that and encouraging people to trust themselves too. Because a lot of people are like, oh, I don't know about that, so I'm not going to look into it. It's like,
but do you get a bad vibe? Yeah, okay, well then trust that vibe.
100%. I think intuition is a really good thing. And we all have some level of it. So I've used a lot of that, honestly, through the years and to kind of direct my path, too, because this was not where I expected to be about 5 or 6 years ago.
You know, I agree. I'm right there with you. I was on a different path after high school
and then came back home and just randomly had a conversation with a physical therapist. And here I am, got 1 year left. And so I'd love for you to actually, if you don't mind, kind of elaborating on your journey, because I think it's unique that people just have not a straight path to where they're at, I think. And I'd love to hear kind of your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, it all really started young for me. I was a competitive club gymnast from the time I was 4 years old to the time I was 14. And I had a lot of injuries. I remember like the first time I ever went to physical therapy, I was 7 years old and I had an ankle injury. And ever since then, I was probably in and out of physical therapy for the next like 10 to 15 years. And I had broken my wrist, broken my elbow, subluxed my shoulder. I was 14. I had a herniated disc in my back, a bulging disc in my upper back. They had tried a cortisone shot for me for my herniated disc. Didn't work. I was the youngest person that they had done a cortisone shot in for that particular problem. And by the time I was 16, I tore my ACL for the first time. And at that point, I believe it happened for a multitude of reasons. In gymnastics, they really emphasize flexibility, but you're strength training so intensely at the same time that you're able to maintain your sense of stability with that level of flexibility. Well, when you quit gymnastics, your muscles are the things that are really holding you together at that point because your ligaments are just so lax. And it's a lot easier to injure yourself at that point. So I ended up tearing my ACL just kind of screwing around because I didn't have that same level of stability because I wasn't training 4 hours a day anymore and wasn't doing the same level of strength training. And in my head, like I didn't realize that correlation, that the level of flexibility that I have wasn't being maintained anymore by that same level of strength. And so this was kind of what initially set me off on my path into medicine was my first ACL reconstruction. And I was 16, had my ACL reconstructed, actually went back into competing in track and field and diving. And I was able to get a pole vault scholarship after just competing for 1 year pole vaulting because, you know, going from gymnastics to pole vault, it's kind of a easy transition. You're used to going upside down and, you know, running full speed at stationary objects, right? So went into pole vaulting and discovered like, oh, I still have some of these chronic injuries that are popping up. I still have knee pain. I still have back pain. I still have shoulder pain. My wrist is not as flexible as it was before I broke it. And all of these things are factors in how your body functions, especially if you're trying to perform as a high-level athlete. And so I went into pole vaulting, went to Hastings College, loved my coach, shout out Adam Driver. he was a fantastic coach. I PR'd by a foot that year and ended up at the very end of my indoor season tearing my ACL again. But this time I tore the other side. And so this was also kind of a turning point, like, oh, I am not healed. There's still something wrong here. And having to recover from another significant knee surgery was like, there's got to be a way for me to do this better. And I was working with physical therapists. And one of the main pieces of when you're rehabbing a knee like that is the first thing they start to check is range of motion. Are you getting your range of motion back? How far can you bend the knee? Can you get it all the way straight? Range of motion is huge. And so I started to see, how can I do this faster? I'm already on my second ACL reconstruction. How can I get back faster? And so for me, that was, I use voodoo floss. I don't know if you know what that is. Have you used voodoo floss? Yeah. So I started to use voodoo floss to do like gap wrapping compression for my knee. And I didn't ice. I focused on range of motion and compression. And I rehabbed faster from that knee than I had my first ACL reconstruction. A lot less pain, and was able to get back to running sooner. I mean, at the same time, doing my strength training and doing my physical therapy. But this was a piece where I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I have less pain, I have more motion, and it's healing faster. Well, more blood flow, more motion, more lymphatic flow, you're going to heal faster, right? Because your blood is what heals you. Your lymph is what heals you. So if I am improving my motion sooner, now I'm going to have more muscle pump, more blood flow, more lymph flow. And if I have less swelling in the knee, now everything is able to move more easily. I'm able to get back to activity faster. And it healed so much more quickly. So I was like, oh, interesting. I'll keep that in my back pocket. And still on this path towards medicine, still a pre-med at this point, and doing college track, doing my pre-med classes, studying for the MCAT, and working part-time as a caregiver in CNA. So I was doing a lot, and I was tired.
Yeah, I bet.
But at the same time, I was learning too, like as a caregiver in CNA, what it takes to kind of meet people where they are and help people out in their own homes after, you know, either they had been through a stroke and they were coming back from the hospital, or they were just elderly and kind of decompensating and just needed some help with everyday tasks. And so I started to see what happens as people age as well, like how you lose muscle, how everything can get worse if you're less mobile, and starting to understand how functionality is hugely important as you age and as you're healing too. I had a kind of juxtaposition of, you know, working with people who were rehabbing or who were elderly, and then seeing myself as a college athlete trying to heal from these knee injuries and get back to my sport. And so I eventually got back to pole vaulting again. And my senior year, I placed 5th at nationals at indoor and 3rd at nationals at outdoor. After having bilateral ACL reconstructions. And so I felt like what I had learned from my process and how I had helped myself recover was something that was really important and that I could kind of take with me, that like these things are possible if you put the time and energy in. Like, yes, my knees are not the same as what they were before I had that done, but it didn't hold me back. And I think that's the most important thing, is understanding that you can come back from these things and you can rebuild muscle and you can have that mentality of, I'm still going to kick it into gear and become better than I was before, even though I had this bump in the road. And so continuing on my path to medicine, graduated with a biochem degree. I actually ended up taking the MCAT 3 times. It is such a miserable exam, and it is so long and so hard. But I do recommend, like, some med schools aren't requiring the MCAT anymore, which I do feel like it would have helped me initially. But I think going into my board exams, you still have to take boards, whether or not you had to take the MCAT, and they're very similar. So if you can learn how to take the MCAT, learn how to take an exam like that, before you go into your board exams, you're going to be way better off. And so I am glad that I had to struggle through the MCAT, because now that I'm done with my boards, I feel much better about that. But that's just my side tangent for people wanting to go into medicine. So there was a piece of me that wasn't sure if I still wanted to go to med school. And I ended up, you know, working some odd jobs for the next 3 years. I got a master's in biomedical sciences from Colorado State University. I really loved their program. And because I was so successful in their program, I was like, okay, I think I can hack it in med school. We'll give it a shot. And so I initially applied to all MD schools and like two DO schools. And I got one interview at one of the DO schools. And I was like, I don't want to live in Alabama. So I didn't take it. I'm sorry. If anyone loves Alabama, like, I'm sure it's great. I'm just from Colorado and it was not my cup of tea. And yeah, you might say like, oh, well, then why did you apply if you didn't want to? I didn't know any better. I didn't know any better at the time. I didn't know how to apply to med school. I didn't know anybody who was doing it. So, I mean, I guess one of my recommendations too is like, if you're doing it, get a mentor, get somebody who's been through the process, because it is a challenging process to figure out on your own. And so I reapplied for med school, but I only applied to DO schools and I was broke. So I applied to four places. And at that point, I did not fully understand the difference between DO and MD schools. And I was like, okay, well, they have a little more holistic approach. Maybe I'll like this. We'll give it a shot. And the one that I really wanted to go to was in Colorado. I could be close to my family, close to the mountains. And so I applied to four schools. I got interviews at all of them. I took two of the interviews before I got offered a spot at the place that I wanted to go. And then I canceled the rest. So I ended up at Rocky Vista in Parker and then discovered what osteopathy was and the hands-on aspect of it. And so I feel like if you're an athlete, for one, especially if you've done any high level of sports, you understand your body and you understand like how you function and pay attention to how you feel pretty well. You're pretty self-aware. And I think that is one thing that really helped when I was starting to learn about osteopathic manipulation, is understanding anatomy, for one, and understanding my own body and how it moved and how it functioned. So it came a little bit more naturally to me in those courses. But I think the crazy part is that I was not planning on going to DO school. I just thought I needed to go to med school, and I thought I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon because orthopedic surgeons were the ones that helped me get through my knee injuries. And so through this process and through like my first couple years of med school, you start to realize that a lot of surgeries, they're just kind of putting a Band-Aid on the problem per se. You're not actually solving what's going on within the person. There's a breakdown somewhere down the line and they're only fixing the breakdown. And as I started to recognize this, that there was no root cause analysis going on. They were just putting Band-Aids on symptoms and people were happy with it because they thought their problem was solved. And then down the line, three years later, something else breaks down. And it doesn't have to be like that, which is something that I discovered within myself. Like, I've had three ACL reconstructions. I've had the herniated disc. I've had the shoulder problems. Well, now I'm running again. I run at least like 10 miles a week now without pain. I train probably 10 to 12 hours a week without pain. And I think a huge piece of this, with me being able to do like the crazy hikes that I like to do, like snowboarding 8 hours in a day. Okay, that's a lot. Maybe closer to six, but like still being able to be highly functional like this and not have the huge chronic pain problems that would be holding me back from it. It comes from continuing my training, understanding where the breakdowns were, and then strengthening those pieces to improve the tensional integrity of my joints. And I think that's one thing that I came across through this process that I would have never actually understood had I gotten into an MD school that I wanted, or had I not had the injuries that I had, I wouldn't be at this point and understanding the body in the way that I do and wanting to help other people do the same. So I'm sorry, that was so long-winded, but with a few tangents. So
no, it was perfect. I enjoyed every second of it. Thanks for one, sharing your journey. I'm so happy that you talked about surgeries, because that is one of our biggest things that we don't like as PTs too, is surgeries, you know, because I think that was a perfect analogy of it's just a Band-Aid on a big wound. That's not going to solve the problem. It's just temporary. Because the reality is, and I actually saw a meme that I think explains it really well. There's a person in a hospital bed. Guy's like, okay, you can have 6 weeks of physical therapy, but you have to exercise every day. You have to do these exercises, yada, 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 2-3 days a week. Or you can do, you know, a surgery. You have, you're in bed for 4 weeks, and then you have 8 weeks of physical therapy, of exercise, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, I'll take the surgery.
Right.
And you're just like,
what? It's pain, sir. Yeah. It's so painful. Like, I can't tell you how many times I thought I had a meniscus tear, and then I would just kind of back off on what I was doing and keep strengthening around it. And then, you know, 3 months later, I'm fine. So it's frustrating, you know, especially with the knees. The knees are ones that I see quite often where people end up getting surgeries to scope and shave off some cartilage when your cartilage is what's helping you.
Yeah, and it's like, I understand where people are coming from when it's like, oh, I'm in pain. It's like, I get it. I sympathize with you. No one likes being in pain. No one likes being sore and stiff. It's the reality of, one, getting older, and two, of just exercising. The great thing about that is your body is so adaptive that you're going to get stronger and better through that. And that pain will actually go away, because when you confront pain is when it starts to actually go away. I think it's something, and again, it just comes back to educating people, right? And
absolutely. Yeah, I think, go ahead. Sorry. I was going to say, I think one of my favorite phrases is choose your hard, because being in pain is hard. Doing your rehab is hard, but getting a surgery is also hard. And so, I mean, it's the same thing with exercise too. Like, you can choose to exercise daily, which is hard, and you're going to be sore, and you're going to have some aches and pains here and there. But you can also choose to be sedentary. You're still going to get a whole bunch of aches and pains, but now they're probably going to be worse. And it's hard to just, you know, let your body decompensate like that. And now you're going to have other medical problems that are going to pop up that you're going to have to treat along the lines that come with being sedentary, like, you know, high blood pressure, diabetes, et cetera. So, you know, you're going to be paying in one way or another. You just have to choose which is worth it to you.
Yeah. And I wish people would talk more about how exercise is like the number one well-researched, like, defender against like the majority of all health conditions. I wish we would just talk about it. And like, when I feel like people have a negative connotation when it comes to the word exercise, fitness, and health. And it's like, I think that's something that we as healthcare providers and even personal trainers can really start to bridge that gap and be like, exercise doesn't mean you have to go run 10 miles or you have to lift 500 pounds. Like,
yeah,
there's physical activity and there's exercise, and exercise has to be structured, but we could get you healthy through physical activity itself. I mean, going on a 3 mile hike up a hill is going to be really better than running on a treadmill for 10 minutes. You know, just depends on it. And then, like, it brings into the fact of how do we make this tailored to the patient, what they're interested in, and then from there, things just start clicking into place.
Yep, absolutely. Well, they do say that the best exercise program for a patient is the one that they want to do. So if you can find something that they'll enjoy, that they'll stick with, that's way better than like, oh, this very specific complicated one that might solve all their problems, but they're not going to do any of.
Right. And I think it's just the beginning, because then,
like, and I don't like going too deep of a dive sometimes, because I feel like listeners and other people can get confused, or
yeah,
they might stay unmotivated still. But it's like, there are different stressors that your body needs for different tissues to get stronger. And like, I like to shy away from that. And just like, what's the couple of things we could do to get you started? And then from there, you'll decide.
Yep.
I think the patient will decide when they're ready to start to dive a little bit deeper. I think it's
exactly.
Just getting that momentum going, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, we know movement is health, and it's the one thing that's going to extend your life, your quality of life and your life.
Exactly. Movement and building muscle. They're my top two.
Exactly. So going through your personal recoveries with both ACLs and things like that, could you speak to how to get through that from a mental aspect, like having patience and things like that? And what are like little tips and tricks you have that you think, or that you also share with patients that you work with?
Oh man, that is a great question. I think a big piece of it for me is the things that I enjoy doing. So I didn't want to lose any of my functionality. I didn't want to lose like being able to go hiking. For me now, also snowboarding. And so keeping in mind the end goal while also celebrating the little wins is really important. Because if you start to discourage yourself, then you'll go in the wrong direction. And there will be setbacks. There are going to be setbacks. There's no straight line to success in anything. And so I think understanding that maybe the setbacks are also important pieces of your journey that are there to teach you something else, and reframing each piece is also important. So I think for me, I was having an issue with one of my knees probably about a year ago, where I wasn't able to train or function the way that I wanted to. And so taking that time to just take a step back and kind of reassess where I was at and be thankful for the things that I could do at that point, and be thankful for how far I had come up to that point, is also very important. And then going from there and trying to move forward. I see a lot of people get discouraged because they're not improving as quickly as they would like to be. And so when someone isn't improving as quickly as they would like to be, or is not in a place where they want to be quite yet, I think it's important to kind of take a step back and look at how far you've come and how far you have improved up to that point, and just celebrate those little pieces, those little wins as you're on the road to recovery. It's really easy to kind of get bogged down in what you can't do. And not saying that I didn't have those days where I was just like, this sucks, everything sucks, and I feel like I'm never going to be able to run again. And it's okay to have a bad day too, because they will be there. But also taking time to, look at it from a different perspective, or like that, like 1,000 mile, like looking down on yourself as like you're somebody else. I don't know if you know what I mean by that, but
I do. Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah. Taking yourself out of your own life for a second, being like, okay, if this was somebody else and not myself, like how would I talk to them, or how would I encourage them? Or, it all comes down to also how you talk to yourself and the environment within your mind. And so anytime I started to feel like I was going down a negative path in my head, I would acknowledge it and reframe. So I would say that that was probably the biggest piece for me, is being able to recognize and then reframe it.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful explanation, right? Is recognize and reframe. Because like you said, it
healing, rehab, no matter what it is, even a health journey, it's not a linear process. It's just dips and valleys all the time. But at the same time, if you can engineer little instant wins, then that's probably the best way, because then you're more likely to stick to it. So yeah, I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah. And that's that momentum.
Awesome. I love that word.
It's a great word.
It is. It's perfect. This has been an incredible conversation, and I love that we're like talking about health and like patients and stuff like that, and we're getting to really see behind the curtain of who you are. And I'm really curious, like, what do you want to do? You know, because you're in med school, you're at the finish line, you're getting ready to start helping patients full on, not that you haven't before with clinical rotations. And so I'm curious, like, maybe what's really driving you, and like, what do you hope to accomplish?
Yeah, I have a vision for my future practice, and it's going to take some time, because I graduate med school in May. After being in med school for 5 years, I'm so ready. I'm so ready to be done. it is time. I'll find out where I match in March. So fingers crossed, I get the program that I want, but we'll see. I'm kind of keeping that close to the vest, but so I'll match in March, and then I'll have 4 more years of residency. And through that time, I hope to kind of understand how I can build my own interdisciplinary practice. And I would love to open a practice eventually where I can, one, be able to do my osteopathic manipulation, because that is something that I want to continue and that I really value and I think is really valuable. And two, I am also interested in some of the orthobiologics, which are like PRP, MFATs, which is the fat stem cells. It's all in the very early stages of research. And I think right now PRP is the one that they have the best research for, especially in knee osteoarthritis. And I think this is a better way to go than some of the cortisone injections that actually helps people heal themselves with their own body components, right? So that is something I want to incorporate into my practice as well, that I think is valuable, that I've seen also be valuable from a doctor that I've worked with out in Boulder. And I said interdisciplinary because I want, under one roof, I would love to have PTs that I could work with. I would love to have personal trainers that understand my goals and understand how to train people in the specific ways that they need, like under my direction. I love TRX. I love Legree or Pilates. I think all of these things can be incorporated to help people become even more functional and strong at the same time. Also having like a nutritionist that people could work with, and also having, what was the other piece I was thinking about? Other practitioners that are holistic. So maybe some naturopathic that can help you with endocrine issues if you're having trouble losing weight. And me being on more of the musculoskeletal side, I want people to be able to funnel down in a way. Like if I'm only able to spend so much time with somebody, I want to be able to now send them to a PT that I trust, that I know is going to do a good job, especially surrounding the certain issues that they have, and be able to address it in a way that is not going to just put a Band-Aid on the problem, that is going to help them be more functional overall and prevent any injuries in the future. And then the PT can eventually graduate them to one of the personal trainers that is going to be able to like work with them on a larger scale and focus on more muscle building on a regular basis, and then have an in-house nutritionist that can follow them through all of this, or maybe even a psychologist or psychiatrist that can help people with the mental aspect of it as well, because a lot of times even with food, like you end up in a certain mindset or addiction to something. And it is hard to break that. It is very hard to break that. And you need the support and you need all aspects of your care covered in order to be able to break these things. And so surrounding yourself with these people will hopefully pull them out of maybe these lifestyle difficulties that they're having, or bringing people into a community, I guess, is more so what I would like to do, into a community that is going to help them heal, help them understand themselves, and then help them take that with them moving forward so they can graduate from this and be able to do it on their own. And we don't have to continue to work with them. Like, my goal is to see somebody and then not have to see them unless I see them in the grocery store, you know? I don't want to have to keep seeing somebody repetitively. Like, I want to empower them to take control of their own health and be able to be functional moving forward.
I love it. That's incredible. I cannot wait to see you make that come true.
I'm excited. It's going to take some time, but I think we can get there.
That's all right. What do they say? All great things take time.
Absolutely. Yeah, we got to plant the seed and then pour some water on it.
That's fair. Anna, thank you so much for, again, spending some time to us. I know you're on break from school and like I am, and it's nice to rest. So again, thanks for your time this afternoon. And I look forward to watching you going forward with your medical journey. And I can't wait to see your dream come through. Fruition and come true. I take it people can follow you on Instagram, because I feel like that's going to be one thing that's going to start growing once you graduate and are done kind of with residency and kind of figuring stuff out.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on Instagram and you can find me on TikTok. My handle is HikerDoc. My last name is too long and complicated. I did not want to put it on there. So HikerDoc is easy to spell. I know I'm not a doctor yet, but you know, we got a few more months. So